Blog Talk Radio.
Dreaded sports talk.
Sports Talk on the Dreaded Sports Talk Network.
That's right, this is Dreaded Sports Talk, and we are actually on the Ship to Shore Radio Network, not the Dreaded Sports Talk Network, but, you know, nothing goes perfect, especially on this show. I am Evil Rob, and I'd like to welcome my trusty co-host, good friend of mine, Ken from Jersey. What's up, Ken?
Not much. Evil, how you doing tonight?
Oh, you know, I can't complain. I'm sitting here with a nice cold Miller Lite and a pack of Marlboro Lights. You know, I like to call that my light diet. And just getting ready here to talk some sports the next hour or so. So what's been on your mind this weekend?
Well, definitely has to be the Giants. I have to admit, I didn't think they would make it to this point. I didn't have a lot of confidence. I had a little bit more after the Atlanta game, but, you know, the Packers were such a powerful team all season. When they took care of the Packers, I felt good about this game. And they took some breaks to get the victory, but that's been a highlight of my week, that by far. Now,
yeah,
rematch with Brady, I just despise the Patriots. So this would be a really good win if we could pull this one off.
Yeah, if the Giants can, but, you know, me personally, I was really happy about the turnout. Well, I wasn't really happy about the turnout of both games, but I was really happy that both games, they were excellent games. They were nail biters, tooth and nail. No team dominated the game. It was what the championship weekend should be, Championship Sunday. You know, everyone looks forward to it for so long, and so many times that there's disappointments where it's, you know, a 27-10 blowout, and you don't know what's going on. Both games should have gone to overtime. One game did. And, you know, like you said, it's a rematch, Super Bowl 42, and we're going to get more into that later on in the show. But you know, I do want to kick this thing off with a little talk about Joe Paterno. As we all know, Joe Pa finally, truly, and really did pass away, even though there were reports 24 hours before it happened that he died, but he is gone. And Ken, I'll let you take the lead on this. And what's your thoughts on Joe Paterno? Should he go down as in history as the greatest coach or one of the greatest football coaches of all time, or should he be remembered as through the whole Sandusky situation?
Well, unfortunately, that's going to, you know, follow him. But as far as what he did on the field and for the university, right up until just recently, he continued to make his, each year he made a pledge. He donated $1 million back to the university in spite of what they, you know, did to him by letting him go. But you can't just forget 60 years of coaching. I personally think there's going to be more to this than we're seeing right now. When it starts to come out in court, when the Sandusky trial starts, don't forget, the guy who's the current governor of Pennsylvania was the prosecutor. And he had this case twice, and both times, you know, said there wasn't enough evidence. It kind of got pushed under the carpet. And it was the other prosecutor. I tried to find the article, get this guy's name, but there was another guy who was also involved, and he just outright disappeared. And to this day, they still don't know where he is or what happened to him. I think there's a little bit more. I think this is a major cover-up, not just you know, from the football department and the athletic department. For whatever reason, this is, I think this is going to be a big story again once this all comes to light in court.
Yeah. You know, I do have to agree. You can't throw out, you know, 60 years of coaching experience. And he did do a world of good for a lot of people, primarily students and the University of Penn State in general. But, you know, I don't know about you, but I did get a chance to read the grand jury report from cover to cover, and it was extremely disturbing. And the things that I took from it is there were two people that went to Joe Paterno themselves and told him about what was going on with Sandusky. And the first one, he went to the president, the chancellor of the school, and the chancellor of the school said, "Don't worry about it. We'll take care of it." And nothing ever happened. Then a second guy came over a while later and said the same thing to Paterno, and Paterno said, "Don't worry about it. We'll take care of it." And nothing ever happened on the school level except, you know, him getting dismissed quietly and still being allowed on campus and all that fun stuff. But, you know, I'm sorry. I have a hard time sitting there putting this man on a pedestal and leaving him, letting him, the world think that he's this phenomenal coach, which he was, this phenomenal person, which, you know, in a way he was. But how can you be a phenomenal person when you're allowing someone like Jerry Sandusky to molest children, child after child after child? You know, there comes a point in time, you know, where, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer was a great guy to his neighbors. You just didn't want him to take you to dinner. You know? It's in the same category. And yes, Paterno wasn't the culprit. He was not brought up on any charges. But at the same time, he was one of the many, many people that allowed this to happen. And that has to be remembered on him. And I think that supersedes what he did as a coach, because I'm sorry, you know, there comes a time, and yes, this is a sports show, but there comes a time when you got to sit there and say, you know what, sports doesn't matter. It's what you do as a person that matters. And what he did as a person in this situation was inexcusable, and everything else, in my opinion, doesn't add up to equal or better the wrongs that he did. Now, what do you think of... There was a memorial service for Paterno, obviously, through Penn State, and tickets on eBay were going for $99,000. The top bid was $99,509 before eBay shut it down. And eBay shut it down because they don't allow the sale of tickets to free events, which is what this was. It was a free event, so they weren't allowing anybody to profit off of this. That's absolutely insane.
That's crazy.
Now, who's to blame? Now, do you think that, like, the people that had the tickets that were just trying to make a buck off of this should be shot, or do you think that,
this is a memorial service. Somebody, you know, you don't try and make money off of it, especially that amount of money. And I mean, any kind of money shouldn't be made. But when you start getting the prices like this, there's always going to be people out there. I see the same thing with StubHub. Now, I love StubHub because I've bought and sold tickets legitimately on it, but I've also seen people who will wait in line or do whatever they can do to get tickets to an event that they have no intention of ever even going near, just so they can put them on StubHub and try and rip somebody off. And this is what, you know, this guy is doing with the eBay tickets here, the eBay site.
Now, what's the chances? Now, granted, he put them up there, but he didn't make the bids for $99,000.
Yeah,
Somebody had to come up and bid that. Now, the question I have is, what do you think the chances of these are just BS bids, that they just don't care, that it's just people that are sitting there going to say, okay, who cares about my rating, and just bidding $99,000 to bid $99,000?
I mean, that's possible, too. That's insane, you know, for any ticket, especially something for a memorial for someone who just passed. You know, there's something not right about selling, like selling tickets to a funeral, basically, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
I got two by the casket. 50
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, that was great, Ken. I think that was the best one-liner you've had in the year and a half we've been doing this show. Yes, that's going to go down in history, my brother. But
there were a lot of people at these memorial services. I checked out some of the websites, some of the pictures, and I guess it's by his statue outside the stadium. There was, like, I mean, just the flowers that they lay down, like, extended from, like, the statue, like, I mean, a long way out. I mean, some, I'd like to be the florist in town this week, but
yeah.
I don't know. It's a shame what happened. I just hope Sandusky deserves to burn in hell right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what makes it even more, to me, it makes it more unbelievable that he's actually saying he's innocent. If there's one or two people, right, one or two kids, you can say, you know what, maybe these people are trying to see what, not, they don't want to go to court, they want to see what they can get, you know, a settlement. Maybe they want to get, you know, some money
right
out of this guy. But not, what is it, 35 people aren't doing the same thing. You know, one or two, I could see possibly.
Yeah, but when you hit 42...
When you hit 42, it's like, yeah.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about the coincidence of the timeline of how everything happened? You know, you basically... Like, last year, he was diagnosed with the lung cancer, but everyone said it was operable, everything was fine, no big deal, and he continued to coach. Then, as soon as he gets his big win, all the Sandusky stuff comes out. A week later, he gets released from his position with Penn, or gets relieved of his duties temporarily. Then about a week later, he gets, you know, terminated from Penn State. Then the weeks following, he just one little thing after another, he gets hospitalized. He has this problem, he has that problem, and then within a couple months, he's dead. Now, and then, you know, like even with his death, It looked like it was just spearheaded because, like, there's just too much of a coincidence. Because, what do you call it, Saturday night, they came out and CBS Sportsline and ESPN both announced that he had passed, and then all of a sudden, boom, he wasn't dead anymore. It was a mistake. And then Sunday morning, everyone woke up tuning into football, and what are you seeing? Joe Paterno passes away. Yeah. Was that just like the family's one more way of throwing his name out there in the media, saying, hey, look, this is one of the biggest media days in sports for the year. Let's do it today. Let's steal that thunder and give Joe the exit he deserves.
It's a lot of coincidence here. I know CBS Sportsline, somebody on Facebook I know who actually went to Penn State, she just graduated, posted on Facebook. So I went to CBS Sportsline. I just naturally go there because that's like where all our fantasy sites are. So I did that as a favor, and I go there first. And they had a report. He was had passed. So I copied and pasted the article, put it on Facebook, made a comment. And then I'm looking at some of the other sites, and they're all saying he's in serious condition. I go, wow, they can't all be that far behind. How is CBS Sportsline this much ahead of him? And all of a sudden I go back to the CBS Sportsline site. Now, their headline reads, he's in serious condition. I got to see if that story is still saved on my page. I don't know if that, once they retract the story and take it down, that disappears too, because I guess that's just a link to that story, so it's probably gone.
Right.
But then everybody changed their story. Yeah, you know, the same thing, I woke up Sunday morning, put on Facebook, and I seen that he really had passed away.
Yeah. So... Yeah, I just think there's too many coincidences. There's everything just seems like it was almost like a scripted drama.
I think they knew something was going to happen, but didn't really make much of it, because not that long ago, he sold the house. I guess the house was in his name, and he sold it to his wife for a dollar, because it has to be some dollar amount, for estate planning purposes. So I think back then they knew this was a little more serious than it was, although they kept saying it was a manageable situation and he should be okay.
Right. Yeah, it's now, it is what it is, and only time will tell of what really transpired over the course of the last not only few months, but, you know, 10, 15 years with the whole Sandusky situation. And, you know, we'll see what Joe Pa's part in this whole thing was, and we'll see what really happens. The only thing that I know is there's no way he's ever going to spend time in jail now. But Joe Pa's dead, and so is this topic. So let's move on to somebody else whose career is now dead, Jorge Posada. 40 years old, 17-year career with the New York Yankees, spent his entire career with the New York Yankees. Had a .273 career batting average, 275 home runs, 1,065 RPIs, RBIs, and a five-time All-Star. He is one of the true Yankees. Hands down, he was drafted by the team, brought up by the team, spent his whole career with the team. He was an amazing player, won, I think it was 5 world championships with the Yankees, and was a big part in all of them. Now, the biggest question I have is there's no question that he was probably one of the greatest catchers, if not Yankee players, of all time. And he will be enshrined in the Yankee Hall of Fame, back behind the outfield wall. But does he deserve to go into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame?
I'd have to check some of the stats on the other catchers that are in now, but looking at his numbers, like he's got over 1,000 RBIs. And the home runs are average, not bad. It's nothing to go crazy over, but it's also he's kind of like right in the middle as far as like the home run totals. His right. average is okay, but you know, as a catcher, you very seldom see a lot of catchers that hit for average. They get beat up back behind home plate. You know, it's tough. Without looking at or knowing some of the other stats right now and some of the other catchers, I would say he probably should get in. I don't know if he's the first ballot, but I think he may be deserving. And I don't usually say too much about Yankees. He was pretty much stayed out of trouble his whole time, his whole career. You know, you never heard of him. The only thing he did, I was kind of cheap, kind of bush, but he took himself out of that game last year. Remember, he said he was hurt.
Yeah.
And then his wife tweeted something, and he wasn't hurt. He was just playing a game because he got taken out of the lineup. But I mean, like one thing in 17 years, it's, you know.
Yeah, when your career's in the downswing and you can't hit the broadside of a barn, and you know, he gets benched in one game, and all of a sudden he's hurt and he can't play the next game.
Yeah.
That is, you know, that's one thing. And, you know, that was also pride. I have to give him that. That was pride because he has had an amazing career, and there was a new coach, and, you know, everything was happening with the Yankee organization. It was actually a little bit of a turmoil position right there because Jeter wasn't playing too hot at the time, and everyone's like, well, and Posada needs to retire, and Jeter needs to retire. This is after Jeter's whole contract deal, how he signed that multi-year, multi-million dollar deal when he didn't really deserve it for the future. But
I mean, the Yankees are going to pay for that. If you notice, the last 2 years, the Yankees haven't gone crazy in free agency. They've done barely anything.
Yeah, I don't think
they've realized, you know what, they've dug themselves a hole because they have a lot of aging players
who
are going to be paid mega dollars, you know, after they're not really worth it. It's, you know, The Angels are going to be in the same boat when Pujols is 42 or almost 43 at the end of his contract. He's going to be getting $30 million.
Yeah, Pujols will be collecting Social Security and still getting paid by the Angels.
Yeah, these big contracts. If you like, I was a little bit surprised today with that the Tigers could afford Cecil. Keep calling him Cecil Prince Fielder. $214 million. Where do they get this money from? The park's usually half full. You know, Detroit's one of the worst. Has one of the worst. Is in a very bad economic time, and they came up with this. I don't get where some of these teams are getting all this money from.
Some teams like the Tigers, I think they're just spending money to spend it, so the other teams don't. Because if they don't spend it, somebody else will. You know, the Twins went out the last couple of years with a new stadium and have spent for the first time in their history. They were up over $100 million payroll. They were like $40 million more than the year before. The White Sox have been spending money the last few years. So in that Central Division, the Tigers have been they've been playing great. You know, they went to the ALCS last year, but they didn't have the payroll. They had two $20 million players in Cabrera and Verlander. Now they have three, and two of them just happen to be first basemen.
I saw something today on ESPN. They projected the Tigers' lineup, and they had Cabrera as the designated hitter. I don't know how he's going to go for that. I think that might be a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Keeping him happy, you know?
Yeah, see, I saw the projected lineup. I saw had Cabrera playing third base, which shocked me. I mean, I know he can play third, but now that leads you to say, well, first let me get back to Posada. First things first, I do believe that he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I agree with you. Definitely not a first balloter, but I would say third, fourth year, he should get in. He's definitely one of the top catchers and top players, and you know, everyone looks at the Hall of Fame based on stats and stats only, but there are certain things that you can't look at, like heart. And when you got a player like Posada that pretty much was the heart and soul with Jeter of that Yankee team for so many years, you know, without a player like Posada and a player like Jeter, that team would not have been anything of what it was. And for that, I think his stats are average. His stats are a little bit above average for what he did, and for a catcher, I think they're pretty good. But he should get in, and he should, but not definitely not first ballot. But now, continue on with the whole Prince Fielder Cabrera deal. Cabrera to third base. That just doesn't make sense. I don't see him being happy there. What you said with him being a DH makes a lot more sense. But once again, is he going to be happy? We all know Cabrera is not a team player. How can I say it? Is that the best way to put it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a nice way to put it. He doesn't like things not to go his way. And when you got someone like Prince Fielder who comes over, who is now going to steal the entire spotlight because of his new $214 million contract, what do you think is going to happen with Cabrera there?
I think you're going to have a little bit of, I wouldn't call it turmoil, but a lot of unhappiness in the clubhouse. He's not a good third baseman, so he's not good. I mean, if he could field, that would be the ideal place for him because most of the current depth charts have Brandon Inge playing third base.
Right.
I mean, he's still a young guy. He's kind of too young to say, you know, you're a designated hitter. You're going to sit on the bench and just, you know, DH and play occasionally when we want to rent, you know, give some rest. But I'm hoping for a lot of turmoil since they play in the Twins division.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going to happen because, you know, like I said, Cabrera's not a team player. Prince Fielder's going to be the new guy in the block. He's going to come in. He's going to have all the jersey sales. Everyone's going to be, oh, Prince Fielder, Prince Fielder, Prince Fielder. And, you know, the guy should produce. He's been a solid player, but he's also never had the big money deal. His father, when he got the big money deal, couldn't do a damn thing.
No. And he said that park in Detroit is a lot bigger than what he's played in Milwaukee. So some of these, like, pop fly home runs he's got in Milwaukee may not go out there. They were a little bit worried about that, but he's still, I mean, the home runs I've seen him hit will go out of any park, so I don't know what the big deal was about that.
Yeah.
Maybe it cost him one, two, three home runs, possibly at home, but like I said, the ones I've seen, he's killed.
Yeah, the guy definitely can hit, but, you know, a park does make a huge difference. I mean, look at Jason Bay, what he did with the Mets. He was flying him out of the park when he was with Boston. All of a sudden, he goes over to the Mets, and
with
the big field, he hasn't hit for shit.
Yeah, sometimes these guys sign this big contract, they get a little complacent, they get lazy. Yeah, I guess time will tell. We'll see what happens. It makes the Tigers, you know, better, but I'm still not. I mean, after Verlander, you got Fister as a good pitcher, and the pitching staff is very suspect after that.
Right. And that's the key. I mean, look at the Yankees for all these years. They've had lineups that they field a lineup on eight of the nine positions. Then you put that pitcher in there, and it's like, okay, who's on the mound now? And the Tigers, they've been doing it for the last 2 years, and they've been getting away with it, but how long can that happen?
Yeah.
You know, they always say in most sports, it's offense wins games, defense wins championships. Well, In baseball, it's generally offense wins games and pitching wins championships. And the Tigers last year, that was their Achilles heel, was the pitching. And when they went against the Rangers, they just got out hit in that ALCS. And when if you give up, you know, 3 runs a game, and you're used to scoring 5, it's great. But when you get held to 2, that's a problem.
Yeah. We'll find out soon. Another month till spring training.
Yep, and I definitely think there's going to be some sort of... They're going to come into spring training all happy-go-lucky and everything's going to be fine, but then once the season gets going, I think you're going to see Cabrera being the person that he really is, and his true colors will come out, and you'll see a lot of turmoil in there. On paper, they're a much better team right now, but paper don't always relate to reality.
They have a lot of positions where they had kind of like new players having career seasons last year, like Avila, the catcher. That guy hadn't really done anything until last year. He had a good season last year. Is he going to do it again this year?
Right.
Brennan Bosch out in right field, he's the projected right fielder. Another guy was having a good year until he got hurt. He missed the second half of the season. He got Austin Jackson. The guy doesn't seem to hit for average much. And Delmon Young. Delmon Young's hurt a lot, too. He's the left fielder.
Yeah. Yeah, the Tigers are, like I said, they got a team on paper that can do it, but if they can keep their heads together and stay healthy,
the years they had last year, this year, they're going to be tough.
Right. Yeah, without a doubt.
Well, Delmon Young had a horrible season. He came alive in the playoffs.
Right.
When the Twins traded him, he wasn't doing anything. And he had the good playoffs with the, you know, those couple games he had like 4 homers and he was on a little bit of a roll there. But that's what the teams had hoped he would be when he was drafted. He was the rookie of the year runner up with Tampa, but he wasn't hitting for power, so they traded him to the Twins. Twins for maybe in the Metrodome. He'll wake up. The best season he had was the season before last. He had 20 homers, 110 RBIs. But again, he was another one of the Twins' injuries. He tore his that ribcage muscle and really never got his swing back. He's a guy you never know. He doesn't always work hard, but
yeah, it's gonna be definitely an interesting baseball season with the. Now, the American League looks like, I don't know what's going to happen with the All-Star game this year, but they look like they're going to be on fire. And just another baseball news, who was it? Where is that? I just lost it. Lincecum just signed a new deal, a 2-year extension for $40 million. So he's going to be with the Giants for a few more years, and... Probably deservingly so, because he's the one player that's been the constant for that team over the past few seasons.
And now with the bigger contract, he can, you know, a lot more money coming in, he can buy better pot.
And maybe he can actually buy a house for him to destroy instead of renting one.
Yeah.
But let's move on to let's wait on the football stuff for a little while, but now this thing just eats my ass alive right here. Tim Thomas not going to the White House with his team for the traditional celebration with the president for, you know, a team championship. As we all know, the Bruins won the Stanley Cup last year, and the Bruins went to the White House a couple days ago, and Tim Thomas was the only player on the team not there. Now, he is one of 2 American-born players on the Boston Bruins roster from last year, and he didn't go. He had all these foreigners going to the White House, but not the American. Now, who did he let down more, the team or the fans?
Probably the team. I mean, I've seen Obama's approval ratings lately. There's not many people that would want to go, actually. So maybe he made the right choice. You know what, if he didn't want to go, if he was that politically against him, he probably shouldn't have come right out and said that. He could have just, you know, made up some excuse. You know, his wife was ill. You know, yeah. Something to,
well, this,
to save
a... This is the quote that he had that he posted on his Facebook page a little after 6 o'clock yesterday. So this is right from Tim Thomas's Facebook post. I believe the federal on why he was not there. I believe the federal government has grown out of control, threatening the rights, liberties, and property of the people. This being done at the executive, legislative, and judicial level, this is in direct opposition to the Constitution and the Founding Fathers' vision for the federal government. Because I believe this, today I exercise my right as a free citizen and did not visit the White House. This was not about politics or party, as in my opinion, both parties are responsible for the situation we are in as a country. This was about choice, and I had to make. This is about a choice I had to make as an individual. This is the only public statement I will be making on this topic. What? Really? Really? First of all, that made no sense. I mean, it does, but at the same time, you're going to let your team and your fans down. Your fans want to see you there. You were a main cog in winning that championship. It's a celebratory thing. It's nothing about government. It's just a celebratory exercise. It's like a ribbon cutting at a grand opening. It doesn't mean anything. It's celebratory. It doesn't hurt you in your stat categories. It doesn't do anything good or bad for you, but in this situation, it did something bad because he looks like a fool right now. And worse things worse, it lets his team down. That basically says to this team that, you know what, the team believes in it, but I don't. The team doesn't care, but I do. And when you're part of an organization and you are almost like a captain on that team, you need to stand up and you need to be a part of everything. And even Obama mentioned in his whole thing about Thomas and how great he was and how he deserved to win the Stanley Cup because of how great he played and all that kind of fun mamma jabba, yabba yabba, hootie had it. It's, I don't know. Tim Thomas, you, and he got his payback today because he was benched. First game after that whole situation, he got benched. So, ha ha!
The Bruins are losing right now, 4-3.
They're losing 4-3. Good thing I didn't start Rask in my fantasy league then.
I got this. Got a shutout from Lundqvist. The Rangers beat Winnipeg 3-0.
Ah, I'm going against Lundqvist too. Son of a bitch.
Actually,
oh, well.
It was a good game for me. I've got two Rangers. I got Ryan Callahan and Richards. They each scored, and Callahan had an assist also. It's a short week though. It's only like, I think tomorrow's the last day to the All-Star break, and I know our league picks up again next year. It's like, it's a week and 3 days.
I don't even know. I didn't even look at that for my league if it goes for
it's
another
week. It's probably
league.
The same thing. That's 3 days is too short. You know, you can't get the goalie minimums. You can't do all the, you know.
Yeah, we don't have any kind of minimums, but still, you know, you get one start out of somebody, and that's it. You know, if a player, like right now, I got Thomas starting, but he was benched, so... Now I don't have a goalie start, and obviously the other team does with Lundqvist. So, you know, I see where you're going with that, and I'm hoping that that's what it is because I'm getting killed right now.
Yeah, I'm like in eighth place out of 12 teams in one league, and then in the other league I'm in first place. I'm like 46 points ahead of the next closest
team.
So I'm just kind of like coasting right now in that league, but.
Yeah, for some reason I just cannot figure out fantasy hockey. I don't know if it's just because I don't know the players. I don't know what it is, but I cannot figure out fantasy hockey. I've been in this league 4 years, and I've never finished higher than, like, sixth place. I've always made the playoffs, but I get destroyed in the first round because I'm playing the top teams. But,
yeah.
You know, it's like I just donate my money hoping to figure it out one of these years. Yeah, this is my first year in a basketball fantasy league, and I'm dominating. I'm 4-0. I have the highest point total in the league. Oh, I'm sorry, second highest now because there's a team in the other division that's 4-0 and has 100 more points because I've had Rajon Rondo's been hurt for like the last 5 games. He hasn't played. So I would be up on points if it wasn't for that. But you know, I can't understand it. And how I've never been done fantasy basketball before, first year ever, all of a sudden I come out and I'm dominating all these guys that have been doing this for years, and they're looking at me going, you've never done this before? Like, that, I guess beginner's luck, you know? But hey, it is what it is. So, yeah, we're... Before we move on to football, and we got a bunch to talk about with football. Actually, before we go on any further, let's get one little thing out the way with the whole Peyton Manning situation. You know, there were reports, Rob Lowe came out with a report that he was going to retire, or Peyton Manning was retiring. It's new general manager, no head coach. The owners, they basically came out, Peyton Manning had a meeting with the new GM, and he was told that Irsay, the team owner, is going to decide what he's going to do with Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning, he's due a $28 million roster bonus on March 1st. First of all, is he at this point in his career worth the $28 million gamble?
I don't think so. Not with a neck. You know, if you hurt a knee, you have the surgery, you come back. He has some kind of spinal fusion or something in his neck. It was like three operations. It wasn't like a simple procedure. At his age, it's not worth the money. I don't know if they can afford to keep both of them guys on the roster, because you have to pay Luck a decent amount of money. I know this new rookie, like, salary cap, it's not like it used to be.
Right.
But they're going to have to give him something decent to, you know.
Yeah.
It sounds nice having both of them guys there on the, you know, with him learning from Peyton Manning, but, you know, if Manning gets hurt, he still has the contract signed. The Colts are still on the hook for a lot of salary cap money, and if he's not even playing, that's even worse.
Right, and the Colts, I was watching a guy earlier today, and he didn't get into details, but he's a little insider on the Colts, and he was saying that the Colts are going to have a lot more salary cap issues than they do just with Manning and Luck. So they might not be able to afford the $28 million and still sign and still draft someone like Andrew Luck. Now, I'm looking at it saying, I have to agree with you. You know, three neck surgeries with, you know, when you're getting your plates and your neck fused together and you're out for an entire season, that's a big injury. It's you're right. It's not a sprained ankle or even an MCL. That's a huge risk, and it's one hit. And we all know that the offensive line for Indianapolis is not that good. So Manning is going to get hit. And can his body withstand that? We don't know. Well, there's only one way to find out. Now, the other option that the Colts have is to not sign that $28 million bonus and not keep him, but re-sign him afterwards to a smaller bonus if they want, or give him a small signing bonus of maybe $10 million, and then trade him. Because it's a lot more likely, I should say, that they will be able to get something decent in trade value for him with a $10 million and a smaller contract, $10 million signing bonus and a small contract, maybe a 1 or 2 year deal, than they could with a $28 million and a new contract. And, you know, the thing that's going to hurt the Colts is if they aren't able to pull that off, they're going to lose a lot, because they decided not to trade him or not to do anything with him during last offseason, before the surgeries came out, before it was announced that he wasn't going to play this year. Because they could have traded him and gotten something for him.
Yeah. There's probably only certain teams. Like, there's a lot of rumors that the Jets are interested, but the Jets' offensive line is a mess. He wouldn't want to come here.
No.
And any team he goes to, he's going to, you know, you're not going to get it for a minimum. He's still going to command a decent salary. And, you know, with the salary cap, you have to be wise. Do you really want to take a chance on paying one guy, you know, that much money when, you know, one hit, he could be gone? And with football, even though you're out, you're still taking that hit on that salary cap. That money stays there.
Yeah, it's a really tough decision on what the Colts have to do. Now, the other question is, who do they go for in the draft? Assuming that Peyton Manning is gone from the Colts, whether he retires or not, or gets signed by somebody else, that's up for discussion on another day. But I'm seeing signs right now of a few years back, quite a few years back, when Peyton Manning himself was drafted. If you remember a guy by the name of Ryan Leaf.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone was up in arms saying, who do you take, who do you take, Peyton Manning or Ryan Leaf? They're both going to be phenomenal quarterbacks. Peyton Manning has had one of the most storied careers in NFL history, and Ryan Leaf couldn't even write a children's book about what he did, because he'd probably be arrested. But I see a lot of the similarities in this with Robert Griffin III. They're saying they're both going to be great quarterbacks. They're both phenomenal guys. They're both Heisman Trophy winners. But what do you see happening? Are they going to go with Andrew Luck or Robert Griffin III? Because they do have the number one overall pick.
I think they'll go with Luck. He's more of a pro style. Stanford plays a pro offense. He's not a running quarterback. You know, the other guy runs the ball a little. He don't like to sit in the pocket where Luck does. I think he's more of a pro type in the pocket quarterback. I think they would go with him.
Yeah. Once again, I have to agree with you because it's just I think Robert Griffin III is just too big of a gamble because he doesn't play in he played for Baylor. And the competition that he had to go against was a lot less than the competition that Luck had to go against in Stanford. You know, the Pac-10 has some good teams. He played in multiple bowl games, had great showings in the games, had two different coaches, and didn't really miss much of a beat going from Jim Harbaugh last year to I don't even know who the coach was this year. But, you know, he didn't really skip a beat. Like you said, he played more of a pro-style offense. He has the mobility. He has the arm. I think Luck is the way to go, and let's hope that, for the Colts' sake, that he's not a Ryan Leaf.
Yeah.
We're going to take a little break right now before we get into the NFL topics. You're listening to Dreaded Sports Talk on Ship to Shore Radio.
Thanks for listening to Dreaded Sports Talk on the Dreaded Sports Talk Network.
Today, I'm going to the beach. It's a sunny day and I'm on my way and I love to feel the heat. See palm trees and coconuts, get the sand in my feet. Saturday morning, sitting around, wishing I wasn't here. Papers read, the coffee's gone, sun's up, the coast is clear. The kids are all grown up now, living on their own. I'm sitting here in my emptiness, living all alone. The years, they pass too quickly, but life's been good to me. I've climbed the highest mountains, I've sailed the seven seas. Seems like every beginning begins where it ends. Full circle came one evening, visiting an old friend. Surfer girls from the surf shops, they make you feel alright. Hanging ten in your flip flops on the boardwalk late at night. Don't matter if you're young or old, no worries anymore. right here on the Jersey Shore. Something's been missing lately, not sure what it might be, so I'm heading on down the parkway to see what I can see. Driving down the coastline from Keensburg to Cape May, top down on the Mustang, an Indian summer day. Memories came flashing back, singing old familiar sounds. Younger days not long ago, here in these beachfront towns. Don't care where I'm going, it don't matter this time around. No more living on the fast track, my world's just spinning round. Surfer girls from the surf shop, they make you feel alright. Hanging ten in your flip-flops on the boardwalk late at night. Don't matter if you're young or old, no worries anymore. Each day begins and unfolds right here on the Jersey Shore. By sunset I'd forgotten what I could not recall before. That something that was missing did not matter anymore. When much to my surprise, hiding behind the door, right before my very eyes, just living on the Jersey Shore. Surfing girls from the surf shops, they make you feel alright. Hanging ten in your flip-flops on the boardwalk late at night. Don't matter if you're young or old, no worries anymore. Each day begins and unfolds right here on the Jersey Shore.
All right, welcome back to Dreaded Sports Talk. I'm Evil Rob. I'm sitting here with my great friend, good trusty co-host, Ken from Jersey here, and that was a little Gary Phillips, and being that Ken's from Jersey, and I am from Jersey, I figured, you know, little Gary Phillips, the Jersey Shore, would be a nice little fitting interlude for this evening. And he was also, Gary was on our show last week, and we had a good little discussion, so if you want to go listen, find out a little bit about the world of college, or not college, high school basketball refereeing, go back and check that out because it was a fun, entertaining little half hour that he was with us for right here on Reddit Sports Talk. But without further ado, I'd like to move on to the playoffs. The AFC Championship game for one, where the Patriots beat the Ravens 23-20 in what I think should have been an overtime game if it wasn't for a complete miscue by Billy Cundiff. Now, you look at it and say, okay, well, Billy Cundiff, he has one job, and that's to kick the damn football through the uprights. It was a 31-yard chip shot. He had no business missing it, especially hooking it wide left like that from the right hash. That was just absolutely inexcusable. But part of the problem I look at and say, wait, was John Harbaugh also to blame for this? Because the Ravens had two timeouts going into that play. Why did he not call a timeout? They rushed on the field, rushed the snap, Cundiff kicked it, and missed. So Harbaugh could have very easily called a timeout, taken their time, relaxed, and made the kick to send the game in overtime at that point, and who knows what would have happened, but at least given the Ravens a chance to win it. Now, Ken, what's your take on this? Who's to blame, Cundiff or Harbaugh, or both?
Well, I think both, because this, you said, was totally correct. They had the timeouts. They had They could have taken it slow, did it the right way. Also, if you go back, when Lee Evans dropped that ball, and he didn't drop, he got stripped, but he had possession of that ball, and he had his body turned. It appeared that he thought he was in the end zone and it was going to count. And you could see he lets up on the ball a little bit, and that defensive back came and swiped it out of his, knocked it out of his hands. If he catches that ball and holds it another second and continues to turn his body so the guy is shielded, that's a touchdown and the Ravens win. That's a veteran receiver who made a poor play.
Yep. Very, very, very true. Very true. And I guess there was a reason why he only had four catches all year.
Yeah. Well, he was hurt. He had a bad ankle from, because I actually drafted him as a backup on my fantasy team, and eventually I let him go because he got hurt in the last preseason game, and he was out for a long time. He just recently came back, but so that's a veteran guy who was the lead receiver at Buffalo. He's not a rookie. This is a guy who's got to catch that ball. You know, he had it. He caught it. He did what he was supposed to. He had the guy screened, but he let up too soon. He assumed it was going to be a touchdown. But you have to catch the ball and follow through. And the ball can't be knocked out that soon. I mean, if the guy knocked it out 2 or 3 seconds later, it's a touchdown. But it was just too close to the time of the catch.
Right. Yeah. Without a doubt, that was. You got to follow through. And like you said, it looked like he kind of, because I was looking at the replay, and he did have 2 feet down with possession of the ball, and as soon as that second foot hit, the ball got stripped out. And the refs ruled it an incomplete pass because of the strip, and unfortunately, that is a play that is not allowed to be reviewed, even in the last 2 minutes of a game by the officials. That's just an unreviewable kind of deal. Did he have, if he was ruled with possession, then it could be reviewed the other way, which makes no sense to me. But because then you're actually reviewing the catch. But once again, yes, you're reviewing a strip, but you're reviewing a catch. To me, that should have been a reviewable play. I don't think that there would have been indisputable evidence to overturn it. So I think that was a good call by the refs at that point in time. But Lee Evans, that was inexcusable for him to not follow through with that catch. So we basically the Ravens loss goes to three people. It's a three-headed monster right there. And thanks for bringing that part up, Ken, because I had completely forgot about that Lee Evans catch, or not catch, or whatever you want to call it.
Non-catch.
Yeah, non-catch.
I think it still comes down to even with all the confusion and all, you know, wasting the timeouts, you still got to make a 32-yard field goal.
Yes, without a doubt.
That's what I was watching the game with some people, and when the Giants were lining up for that field goal, everybody was like, okay, we got it now. I said, wait, let's not, this is only a yard shorter than the one Cundiff missed. This is, you know, the way things are going today, this isn't a gimme. Plus, they're playing on a wet field, wet ball. You know, you never know what could happen. Your plant foot slips. Luckily, he made that one right down the center, but
yeah.
After seeing that, because Cundiff is usually pretty reliable. He's not a long-range kicker. His longest was 51. That was it. But he's the kind of guy usually nails those short ones. That's what he does, you know? So for him to miss that was...
Yeah, he was in the Pro Bowl last year, and this year he's in the Toilet Bowl.
Yeah.
But both quarterbacks went 22 of 36. Flacco threw for 306 yards. Brady for 239 yards. Brady did not have a touchdown pass. And this was a game that was dominated by defense. And we all know that the Ravens offense is not a high-powered, potent offense. But the Patriots do have that. The Ravens defense was actually able to shut down Brady for the most part. And they did everything that they needed to do to win the game. Unfortunately for, you know, us New England haters, the Patriots came out on top. What was the key in your mind? I mean, you watched the game like I did. What did the Ravens do to keep Brady from going crazy?
It seemed like early in the game they got some pressure on him and he got hit a few times. It seems the key to slowing down Brady is to hit him. He doesn't think he's a pretty boy. He don't like to get hit. The first quarter, he got hit a couple times pretty good, and it seemed just to throw him off. I mean, he had some guys open. He was missing some receivers.
Yep. Yeah, and the thing that I look at on top of the pressure is they were not allowing the yak. They were not allowing any yards after the catch. They were letting the ball go to the tight ends, go to Welker, go to Gronkowski, go to Hernandez. But once they caught the ball, they were getting drilled. And that's New England's bread and butter is, you know, they don't have the deep threat. They don't have Randy Moss anymore. And, you know, Ocho Cinco didn't play, so, well, he's not really much of a deep threat anymore anyway.
Yeah, Deion Branch, they've all slowed down.
Yeah, so they really don't have any kind of a deep threat. And Wes Welker has the speed, but he doesn't have the size to be that threat. He can't go against
a six. Yeah, he's a possession guy. You'll see him in a regular season game with, you know, 8, 10, as many as 12 catches in the game. He runs in little short patterns. He's had a couple 40-yard touchdowns only because there were some blown coverages and he was wide open. But he's not going to outrun anybody down the sideline.
Yeah, even his 99-yard touchdown catch, that was like a 4-yard pass.
Yeah.
That was just over the line, and he caught it, and there was a missed tackle, and he was gone to the races. So, you know, and that's what the Ravens did, was they didn't allow the receivers and the tight ends to be open to break those tackles. They were making the tackles instead of not making them like everybody else has done against the Patriots. But the Patriots are now 10-0 in the last 10 games. Their last loss was to the New York Giants. And they have now lost 2 in a row of the Giants, including Super Bowl 42, which we all know very well. And speaking of the Giants, why don't we move on to the NFC Championship game, which was another amazing game. This one did go to overtime. And there were 2 field goals, one by Akers to send it into overtime, and one by Tynes to win the game for the Giants. The Giants won it 20-17, and what would you say was the key to that game there, Ken?
The punt, well, actually it was 2. The first one was the first punt that bounced off Williams' leg. They teach you in Pee Wee and high school football, if you're not going to catch it on the fly, fair catch it or run it, just get away. I heard a coach on TV today saying, usually when that happens and the ball hits the ground, they just yell, scatter, scatter, and you run the opposite direction of the ball. You don't even go anywhere near because you don't know which way that ball is going to bounce.
Exactly.
But he was right on top of it. And at first it didn't appear that they were going to give it to him. The referees were kind of like, and he's saying, no, no, no. Then when he showed it on the replay again, he could see it clearly hit his leg and bounced a different direction.
Right.
And then the second one was, you know, of course, his other fumble in overtime when he got stripped.
Yep.
I also thought early in the game that the Vernon Davis touchdown, it looked to me like he stepped out of bounds. It looked like his heel was on the line.
Yeah, it did.
That's when I get frustrated with replay because they take all this time to review it and they get the call wrong.
Yeah, it was 2 weeks in a row that I firmly believe that they got a call wrong against the Giants. That was a key play. You know, last week it was Jennings' fumble.
Yeah.
That they said was not a fumble. This week it was Vernon Davis's touchdown catch where you clearly saw his foot step on the white portion of that line. And I don't know what's going on with the refs, but something has to be done with the replay. I don't know if you have to give take the replay official that has nothing to do with the game so their pride isn't hurt. I don't know if it's a thing on pride on these on-field refs about overturning these calls because they don't want to go against the home team. They don't want to get booed or their car egged or assaulted when they leave the stadium. But there has to be something done with the replay. It's either, you know, if you're going to do the replay, get it right. If you're not going to get it right, why bother even having instant replay?
They can do what the NHL does. They have replay on goals, but the replay official isn't actually in the rink. It's on a television feed with all the different angles.
Right.
Back to Toronto. And there's people in an office there watching. If there's a replay, they watch it from a million different angles. And this way, it's not, you're not overturning a call by another one of your you know, at the linesman or somebody. It's somebody else ruling on this. It's something's got to be done because I like replay. I mean, sometimes it takes a little too much time and it slows the game down, but if you're going to get it right, it's worth it. If you're going to take all that time
right.
and still get it wrong, then it's, you know.
Yeah, and the other thing with the replay that I look at is you need indisputable proof to overturn a call. Well, why? Why can't a replay official just go up and make a decision, make a call on the play? You know, that you take a replay official, like you said, that's not even in the stadium, that's sitting in a bar down the street with 15 TV screens around him and 15 different angles, and he looks at it for 30 seconds and says, okay, this is the call. Regardless of what was called in the field, this is what it is, and that's it. You know, that's the way replay needs to be because there are so many calls. Like, for instance, even during this game, they were saying that, or it was either this game or the game before, the AFC game, where they were saying about the quarterback dives. The reason why we're seeing so many more quarterback sneaks on the goal line is on fourth downs is because whatever the spot is on the field, it's so hard to overturn it because you need indisputable proof of where that spot is. And with, you know, 2 tons of linemen in the way, there's no way to have indisputable proof. So something desperately needs to be done with the way replay is handled with the NFL. And, you know, you could say I'm a bitter Giants fan, but at the same time, regardless of whatever happened, I just think that something needs to be done. And the person, the on-field ref should not be the one that's making the call on whether he called the play correctly or not. But now, you mentioned Kyle Williams before and his 2 punts being pretty much the key, which is what turned the whole game around, because if it wasn't for the first muff where it grazed his leg, the Giants never would have scored the go-ahead touchdown. And if it wasn't for the second punt that he fumbled, that he had stripped away from him, the Giants never would have been in position to score, or at that exact time, to kick the field goal.
Because San Francisco's defense was playing good. That was the best defense.
Their defense was absolutely incredible. When they have 7 sacks on Eli. Eli had no time to do anything. The first half, he threw to Cruz for 10 receptions for 142 yards. Second half, he couldn't find Cruz to save his life.
Yeah, he had no catches in the second half.
Yeah, no catches whatsoever. Shut Cruz down. The 49ers defense was absolutely incredible. The Niners defense deserved to win that game hands down. But Kyle Williams, you know, he's another one that he's pretty much to blame. He's the reason why they lost. And everyone says, oh, yeah, you lose as a team. Well, you know what? Yeah, you lose as a team because the team loses. But there's always someone responsible. And Kyle Williams was responsible. But does he deserve to be getting death threats?
No, that's ridiculous. I mean, now you're getting crazy.
Yeah, he's received multiple death threats. In between his Facebook and Twitter and, you know, letters that are coming in to emails coming in to San Francisco's main office, and the NFL is investigating these, and they're probably, I heard reports are getting the feds involved because, you know, of what happened with Mitch Williams back in, I believe it was the 1990 World Series, after he threw that home run ball to Carter. He was getting death threats. He's still getting death threats every once in a while. But, you know, they don't want to see a replay of that, especially with the way that, you know, people are today. People are crazier today than they were, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And you got to take things a little bit more seriously because there's so many different ways to go about things than to sit there and say, you're going to die. And you know, the funniest one that I read was threatening his, I'm not only going to kill you, but I'm going to kill your wife and your 2 kids first. Well, first of all, he's not married. He doesn't have any kids. So I actually had to laugh at that one. It's obviously someone that has no clue what's going on.
Yeah. You got people jump on Twitter and Facebook, but what I don't understand is if somebody puts a threat, they can find out where you are. I mean, somebody has to sign up for the account, and they can check your ISP address.
Right.
One time somebody tried to sign onto my Facebook account. I guess somebody tried to hack it. And they must have tried the password like a million times and couldn't get in. And I had a warning on here. It actually showed me a little map of where that the attempt was coming from, and it was from someplace in Illinois. And I'm like, I don't even know anybody. That somebody was trying to hack it, and they couldn't get in. So if the police really are taking these death threats serious, they should be able to find out where it came from.
Right. Yeah, without a doubt. And
even if somebody uses a fake name, like I know people with a second Facebook page and with a made-up name. So you can do that, but still it has to come from, has to be connected to a legitimate email address, and they can see where you're coming from.
Right. Yeah, your IP is tracked everywhere. There's a reason why there's cookies, why you search something on Google, and all of a sudden you go to Sportsline, and what you just searched on Google is popping up on Sportsline.
Yeah.
Because they know where you're at. They know what you're looking for. And, the way the Internet is right now, to do something like this, not only, one, is it stupid, because, I'm sorry, it's a game. Yes, I understand. Fans are fans, and people get upset, and it's a big deal when your team loses. It's a heartbreaking thing. But at the same time, no one deserves to get death threats over that. And for all the people out there that have made them, if you're listening to the show, grow the hell up, plain and simple. There's no excuse for it. It's absolutely ridiculous, and I just hope that they find these people and actually do something to prosecute them, whether it's terroristic threats or cyber stalking or whatever they can get on them to do it. But let's move on to something that's a little bit more upbeat than death threats, and that's Alex Smith. This kid has shown in the last 2 weeks that he can play. He went 14-2 in the regular season. No one gave him a chance. He had 6 different offensive coordinators in 6 years, 3 different head coaches, brand new head coaches here. Finally, Jim Harbaugh comes in, believes in this kid. And would you say that now, finally, he's showing that he did deserve to be that number one draft pick and is a top-tier quarterback in the NFL?
Yeah, I don't know if I say he's a top tier yet, but he's on his way up. I mean, he's got to do it for, I'd like to see another season out of him. But, yeah, if he has some stability, not like a total, parade of coaches, he can probably do it. It's hard when you keep changing the system. There's so many things that could change, the playbook, the calls. You can't have that many coaches that short of a period of time.
Yeah, and I agree. You got to see more time after him, because one season does not make a great quarterback. There's so many guys that have proved that. Trent Dilfer had a Super Bowl winning season, but it didn't make him a great quarterback.
Yeah.
So yes, he had a great game against the Saints, but he didn't come anywhere near that type of game against the Giants. If it wasn't for the 2 passes, where is the stats here? Let me pull up the stats because I have them here somewhere. He had 196 passing yards. Vernon Davis had 112 of those on 3 catches. He had 12 total completions, so he had 9 other completions for 84 yards in that game. And we were talking earlier how that Vernon Davis touchdown, the 73-yard touchdown catch, should have been about a 35-yard pass because Vernon Davis stepped out of bounds. So, yeah, he had a great game against the Saints, and everyone was jumping on the Alex Smith bandwagon. But right now, I'm not. I need to see more out of this kid. I'm not a believer yet. I don't think he's a top-tier quarterback. He definitely does not deserve a Pro Bowl selection. Like everyone was saying, he should have been in the Pro Bowl. If right after they're like, Eli Manning's going to be playing, they should put Alex Smith in the Pro Bowl. No. Cam Newton got that nod, and he deserves it. The only other person I say should have been in instead of Cam Newton was Matt Stafford from Detroit, because that kid had a hell of a year. He should get comeback player of the year, and he was just amazing. Over 5,000 yards and took a team in Detroit to a playoff berth that hasn't seen the playoffs in years. But we'll see what happens with his future, because he's on the way up as well. Now, on to the Super Bowl matchup. We got a rematch of Super Bowl 42. The New England Patriots against the New York Giants. There are a lot of similarities and a lot of differences in the teams from 4 years ago. Now, biggest similarity is New England still has a high-powered offense. biggest similarity for the Giants, they still have a crushing style defense. But that's pretty much where the similarities end. New England's defense has been coming up strong the last 2 weeks. Since the playoffs started, they have been on fire. The Giants, for the first time in a long time, that I've been a Giants fan since I was, 8 years old. And I've never seen the Giants have an offensive year like this where they can't run the ball, yet Eli throws for almost 5,000, or a quarterback throws for almost 5,000 yards. Two 1,000-yard receivers.
Yeah, the running game is totally different than the last Super Bowl. It's just not there. But they've gone from a running team, which they weren't back. To a major passing threat, which they weren't back then. It's a role reversal. They've gone the opposite way. And now
And the Patriots are, I mean, both teams are extremely hot coming in. The Giants have won, five games in a row now. Yeah, they beat the Jets, the Cowboys, and two must-win games to get into playoffs. And they've won three in the playoffs. They dominated Atlanta, had a pretty dominating win against Green Bay, and the nail-biter against San Francisco. They beat the two top teams in the NFC. They've beat the Patriots already this year, and this is a little stat that I came across earlier today, and it's when two teams play each other in the regular season, the winner of that game is 5-7 in a Super Bowl rematch. That doesn't bode too well for the Giants. And the Patriots, being their hot team, they've won 10 games in a row, and their last loss was to the Giants. So who do you think is the hotter team coming in?
I think the Giants have beaten better teams to get here. I mean, it started with the Jet game. I mean, the Jets weren't what everybody thought they were going to be. They beat Dallas in a must-win game. They went into Atlanta and beat Atlanta. They went into Green Bay, beat Green Bay. They went into San Francisco, beat San Francisco.
Well, they played Atlanta at home, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. But I think the Patriots so far have played Tebow, and I wouldn't say a totally weak, but not really a powerhouse offense in the Ravens. The Ravens' offense has struggled this year, and it's made the defense look much better than they are. The Patriot defense, statistically during the season, gives up a lot of yards.
Right.
I think that they'll be able to. The Giants will be able to pass on them. And also, it's 2 weeks till the game, but there was a report today that Gronkowski was walking around the complex with a protective boot on his foot. He got rolled up on pretty good. I don't know if you saw that play.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you got 2 weeks till the game, so you never know what will happen. But
yeah, if there's a chance that if Gronkowski doesn't play in this game, it's a whole different animal for the Patriots, because their offense revolves around Gronkowski.
Because the double tight end, if you cover one, Hernandez is open. If you cover Hernandez, and you have to keep an eye on Welker.
Yep.
I mean, when the little Ocho Cinco plays, you can just let him run around by himself, and he still won't get open.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you look at both teams, and you say you got three guys on both teams that are feared to catch the ball. Like you said, the Patriots got Welker, Hernandez, and Gronkowski. The Giants have Manningham, Nix, and Cruz. And it's going to be tough for both defenses to match up. And I just think that, the Giants defense, they have a hard time covering tight ends. I don't know what it is, but every time they play a solid tight end, the tight end goes nuts against them, as shown by Vernon Davis.
Vernon Davis was the offense. If they didn't have Vernon Davis, it would have got shut out.
Exactly. If they could have shut down Vernon Davis, it would have been a completely different ballgame. But they didn't, and we all saw what happened with that. Now, when you got two tight ends that are the quality of Vernon Davis to go against, that's going to be a big problem for the Giants' defense to contain that two-headed monster. But the Patriots' defense, is their secondary strong enough to contain the three-headed receiving monster the Giants have, because that the Patriots' secondary is very suspect. And I personally don't think they can do it. I have an odd feeling this is going to be one of those shootout games, just because unless the Giants can do what they did in 2007 and what the Ravens did last week and just keep hitting Brady and throw him off his game, because everyone knows that's the key to beating Brady, knock him on his ass. The more Brady's on his ass, the less confidence he has, and the easier it is to curtail the passing game. Other than that, they're going to be in a lot of problem, and it's going to be a shootout. I don't think it's going to be a 15-13 game like it was.
No.
In 07. I'm thinking this would be more I'm thinking 27-24 as an early score, but I'm even thinking that might be too low.
It's definitely going to be a high scoring. Back in the last time they played, both teams had the Patriots had a much better defense. Both teams. I could see the Giants having major problems covering the two tight ends and Welker, but then I could also see them having trouble with the Giant offense too.
Yeah, and if the Giants
towards the end of the game, the second half of that game, the Ravens actually started to run the ball a little bit on them.
Yeah, and that opened
things
up
out. And I think the Giants, although they're not going to dominate with the run, I think they mix the run the pass to keep them honest. They should be able to move the ball.
Yep, exactly. Well, I think it's about time to wrap up this fun and exciting Dreaded Sports Talk hour and 16 minutes we're at right now. So, Ken, you got any final thoughts for us?
Yeah, I had a couple things I was thinking of that I read and seen this week. This isn't really like a major sport, but I've seen this. I guess he's a skier, like one of these X Games skiers, like a Canadian girl. She's like 29 years old, just got killed from a training accident. And I seen this thing on the news that, you know, she's Canadian, and their insurance doesn't pay for any of these expenses. And I just thought that was horrible. Here's a woman skiing for the country, and they're taking donations and having fundraisers in the United States to raise money to pay for this woman's not the funeral, but I guess the time she was in the hospital, she rang up some pretty hefty medical bills. I'm thinking that's I don't know, that just bothered me, that you're skiing for your country, and then that's their system. They don't help you.
Yeah. The country just kind of backs off and says nothing about it and doesn't back you up in any way, shape, or form and just let your family suffer with medical bills when you were training specifically to represent your country in Olympics games.
Yeah, they were this. It was called the half pipes. They actually got into it, made it into an Olympic sport with her backing and her, pushing it and getting it, actually into the Olympics. And now they're doing fundraisers in this country to help, with the enormous bills that the family has. That's the kind of type of insurance and medical plan that our illustrious president is trying to push through. He wants the same thing for this country.
Right.
We'll be going to Mexico to get medical help soon.
Olé!
A shot of tequila.
Bite on the cactus, man. Just bite down on the cactus bottle. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm just looking at right now, this is like one of those times of year where the sports world is it's like the changing of the guard. We're getting down to the crunch time. We're just about a month away from March Madness coming up. We got basketball in full effect. We got hockey in full effect. NASCAR starting up in about a month. Football is winding down except for two games. You got the Pro Bowl coming up this week and the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. It's just a huge, huge just switchover in what's going on because usually people focus on one sport, and that sport for football is basically over now. So everyone is starting to pick up everything, and baseball preseason is going to be starting up soon. But the biggest thing that I'm looking at right now is basketball, because this shortened season that they're having, it's like 122 days and 66 games in that time frame, and it is starting to take a toll on the players. You're seeing it already. At first, I was thinking that it's going to benefit the older, more experienced players, the ones that usually can't go for the full length of the 84-game season, the 84-game, six-month season. And I was thinking, oh, it's a shortened season. It's going to be better for them. But now I'm looking at all these injuries coming through, and you're seeing a big, big, big hit. You know, players like Rajon Rondo, Dwayne Wade, Kobe's been hurt. There's a lot of players. Every day you're seeing new guys going down for – right now it's just been a few games, and there's a few that are out for months. But what's going to happen? How hard is this decision going to affect what happens in the long run of basketball this year? And, you know, you're coming from a league that with a strike-shortened year – the fans are all about it now. Everybody's back in full swing of basketball, and hopefully, you know, these injuries don't kill the season, because I would hate to see good teams like Boston or Miami, you know, as much as I don't want to see either of those teams win, I don't want to see them lose or not make the playoffs because of injuries. And that's something you just never want to see. You want to see them win on merit or lose on merit, not because, you know, two or three of their starting key players aren't playing. So, well, that wraps up another episode of Dreaded Sports Talk. We will be back next week, same dreaded time, same dreaded channel. Or should I say, same dreaded time, same ship channel. And next week, I guess, we'll have our Super Bowl special, because it'll be the last show we're going to do before the big game, recapping the Pro Bowl, if we really ever even want to get into that mess of cuckoo-ness. Of, you know,
the only thing worth talking
about
the Pro Bowl is usually the contest at halftime, where they have the fan who wins the contest tries to kick the field goal for the car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the most entertaining thing. And, you know, being that there's no Patriots, no Giants, and I don't even know if I'm going to watch the game. But
that's what's crazy about the All-Star game. You just assume that the two teams in the Super Bowl have the majority of the good players. But with the Super Bowl being the week after the All-Star game, the Pro Bowl, they can't play. So you're eliminating, I mean, just the Patriots alone, Brady had to back out.
Seven guys.
You got the two tight ends and Welker, maybe Wolfork. And the Giants, you probably had, you know, Knicks. You probably, you know, Manning. There's a lot of choices of guys that could have played. And
right.
Then you're taking out maybe anywhere, depending on the season and the team. Like last year with the Packers, there were so many Packers that deserved to go, and none of them could play.
Right. Yeah, and that was just something that's been the last few years. It started 2 years ago in Miami, where they moved the Pro Bowl to the week before the Super Bowl. It was always the week after the Super Bowl. That way, everyone could play. And who does that hurt? The fans. And it's absolutely ridiculous that, you know, deserving players like Tom Brady, Eli Manning, Will Fork, Pierre Paul, Welker, Gronkowski, they can't play in the game that the fans voted them in to play in. So, but we'll get more into that next week. We'll go over the Super Bowl soup to nuts next week. We're going to get in-depth with that. And maybe the captain will be back. Maybe Frank or Dred will. Maybe he won't. We'll never know. We'll have to wait till next week to see. But until then, this is Evil Rob with Ken from Jersey, saying we'll see you next week. Peace.
Good night, everybody.
I'm sitting here drinking a beer bar. Really don't think I'm gonna get too far today. The sun is dancing all across the bay right now, and I ain't getting off this bar stool before the sun goes down. Took a while to get here, but not long for me to know. I'm gonna ride those salty breezes just as far as I can go. Gotta take life easy, cause it's too short to take it hard. I realize I've been tropicalized. Whoa, I realize I've been tropicalized. There's a lady in the corner sitting all alone, and the band's playing music that is sweet and slow. I'm gonna buy her a drink, I'm gonna ask her to dance. I'm feeling too good not to take this chance. It took a while to get here, but not long for me to know. I'm gonna ride those salty breezes just as far as I can go. Gonna take life easy, cause it's too short to take it hard. I realize I've been tropicalized. Whoa, I realize I've been tropicalized. I think it's time to be a beach bum. I think it's time to have some fun. Just pour yourself a cup of spiced rum and hang out in that tropic sun. Just listen while those steel drums play. It's a barefoot party every day. Then I toast the sunset with my island girl. I'm never going back to the real world. It takes a while to get here, but not long before you know. You're gonna ride those salty breezes just as far as you can go. You gotta take life easy, cause it's too short to take it hard. When you realize you've been tropicalized. Whoa, when you realize you've been tropicalized. Whoa, whoa, when you realize you've been tropicalized.
You're listening to Dreaded Sports Talk on the Dreaded Sports Talk Network.
Get the